ask the same question that I asked 6 years ago. Why me? Why did God choose me to do this? But in a different sense now. Because of everything that has happened the past 6 years. It's extremely rewarding finally seeing what my calling, what my purpose is. I could finally see everything coming together. I saw the bigger picture.
Awesome, Alvin. It's just fantastic to have you have a chat with someone who's as inspiring as what you are. You know, I've been listening to quite a few interviews and just blown away by your story. I hope you don't get too bored telling your story, because you must have told it 1,000 times.
No, it's honestly, every time it's almost like there's something that stands out to me, because everyone asks it in a different way.
Right.
But no, I never get bored of telling the story or, you know, sharing that hope.
Great. Well, it's a generous thing to do, man. It's a generous thing. I know when people come and, you know, I do talks every now and again, people come and ask, you know, it, sometimes it drains you, and but you've got so much to give. So I appreciate the generosity,
man.
Yeah.
No, you want to sit right.
I must admit, I've been quite trepidatious about this conversation, because what you've done, and I mean this from the bottom of my heart, what you've done for me is bigger than climbing Mount Everest several times with a speeder. I mean, that's the magnitude with which I view the triumph and I mean this, and I tell you why I mean it. Many years ago, I had a hernia operation, you know, and I mean, this is like a trifling nothing compared, and they did a nerve block in my, you know, because when you recover from the operation and they've done a nerve block, you can't feel a thing, and my left leg couldn't move, and I tell you what, Alvin, I experienced panic like it blew my mind. I was knew it was temporary. I knew it was temporary. I knew it would go, but the panic in my brain from this not being able to move. Much so that I recently had a shoulder operation. I had a tendon tear replaced. And I said to the doctor, please don't do a nerve block, whatever you do, because that feeling of not being able to move your limb. And not only that, when I came out of the op, you know, it's quite a long process. It's 6 weeks in a sling, and then another 6 weeks before you can even do it. And I just started last week with the small strengthening in a little tiny bands. And it was incredibly difficult, you know, and that's just my shoulder, and I knew it was going to go away, you know. And the mental battle I went through, the anguish and the fear and the sense of not being able to do stuff, and, you know. So when I look at what you've been through and the fact that you've accomplished more in your life than most people ever do, no matter what, you know, situation they find themselves, it's mind-blowing. So I just want to say much respect and much inspiration, truly, from the bottom of my heart. Awesome, and you are an absolute inspiration. I mean that more so than almost anyone I've ever met. You know, I mean that. So really sincerely, hats off and power to you, man, and continue inspiring. Sorry, that's great. A long introduction. Yeah. But I just wanted to get that out there, man. And I mean, what was the process you went through? This bright, shining young life, you know, athletic, active, you know, rugby, running, etc., and the adjustment must have been utterly mind-blowing, but the courage that it must have taken. Yeah. So, I mean, I'd love to just hear the process you went through, man, to get from that to where you are now.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people focus when they look at my story and read about my story, the obvious thing that stands out is the car accident and being paralyzed. Obviously, that was the biggest thing. But I'd always say that not many people know of exactly what happened before that. Now, in my book, I go into all the detail about this, where I share more, you know, my growing up years. And, I mean, my parents got divorced at the age of 9, struggling with addiction, going through school, having 2 shoulder operations, getting meningitis, ulcerative colitis that really damaged my body tremendously. And looking back at all these things, it's kind of like we go through these tests and trials in life. And when something like this happens, a car accident or you get paralyzed, I felt the sense of everything that happened in the past really just prepared me to deal with this a lot better than the average person. That's the way that I saw it, and that's the way that I embraced kind of what happened and had that mindset of, but this is not going to destroy me. I've been through a lot already, and that really made you, you know, battle-worn, and it made you strong getting through these things. But it doesn't diminish the fact that it was extremely tough to deal with it. It doesn't take it away, but it definitely, there was a mind shift that took place growing up, preparing me for this. And that's always the message that I try and tell people, that like everything that you are going through and have gone through, do not forget those things. Do not just put it behind you. It's really that's where we, you know, get trained for battle. That's where we get strong. And the day that the accident happened, man, that was, it was the biggest wake-up call to life, to think that this actually happened to me and I have to deal with this.
Right.
And also, you know, the day that I took that decision to say, I'm in this. Yes, I've got support from family and friends, and the world is there for you, essentially. I'm still the one in the wheelchair, and I'm still the one that has to wake up every day, and I have to deal with this. So we do have to take responsibility for these things that happen. And that also changed, you know, it changed the way that I approached things, that I didn't have that mindset of poor me, like, oh, shame, this happened to me. I had many questions, of course. I still have many questions today. But at the end of the day, I have to do something about it.
Right. Well, that's the mind-blowing thing. It's an attitude, you know, there's that old saying, you can take a horse to the water, but you can't make it drink. I mean, no matter how much preparation you'd had, you still had to make it. And I guess that decision was a daily decision, maybe an hourly decision for a long time. I'm not going to feel sorry for myself. I cannot change this. I'm in a... But I mean, and very many, many people, and this is a powerful message, man. So many people dealing with far less than what you are or have dealt with feel sorry for themselves, you know, and they blame the circumstances, and they get into this mindset of negativity and fear, and, you know, and be able to do what you did, to say, you know what, I cannot change this, but I can change my attitude. Yeah. I mean, that's probably the most powerful message you could give any youngster growing up. Huh?
Really?
You can't change your circumstance, you can change your attitude. It's the only thing you've got 100% control over.
Yeah. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing that I can do. Many people are seeking inspiration and upliftment, and I can't physically change your circumstances. I physically can't do anything for you. You know, I can try and help you. I'm thinking of a bigger sense. If I speak to a whole school of children, the best thing to do is to let them realize that you want to change their perspective of how they see things.
Right.
And then everyone can do something about their own situation with the help of course. Of course, you know, I'm religious, so with the help of the Lord. But you understand what I mean. Like,
yes,
you have to do something about it.
100%. I mean, and that is probably the most empowering truth on earth, isn't it? The fact that you have 100% control over your attitude and your actions. And you did that. I mean, you're a master at that. I mean, that's something you can teach the entire world, you know. It doesn't get much harder than what I had to deal with, but I did. And here I am, smiling and inspiring. And I mean, doing Ironman and doing swimming from Robert. I mean, how many people with full use of their legs do that? Very, very, very few. Oh, and so, I mean, it's, you know, you walk the talk, literally, and swim the talk. And, you know, I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, you talked about the people in your life. How did the people in your life, what sort of role did they play in this process? You know, I guess you had some inspirers, some...
So, I mean, my accident happened in a December holiday. So all my family was in the area, which was great. You know, when I went through rehabilitation, there wasn't one day that I was alone. Not one day. Fantastic. And that's a huge privilege. Like, I went through rehabilitation. Obviously, I saw other patients. And there are some people where their family and friends literally forget about them. And that broke my heart. And I realized that how amazing it is you have that privilege You have my family and my friends there that support me through life, through the journey. And not just in rehabilitation, in the whole journey. Like even in Ironman, I need friends that can help me do the transitions, getting from the ocean into my bike. And I always say this, it's not a one-man show. I had a lot of help to do this. Yes, I did the Ironman and I swam the 8 kilometers, but there's a lot of help that goes into it. Sure. And I will always give credit to everyone that helped me. And that really, you know, I was very fortunate for that, the support that they gave. But I also saw in the beginning the toll that it had on my family and on my friends, seeing me in that situation, seeing me and wishing that they could do something for me more than just, you know, help me carry things or help me get in the chair.
Yes.
Like I remember my dad, he once told me, he said he wished that would rather happen to him at his old age than with me at the age of 24, because he's already lived a full life.
Right.
You know, and I think many people feel that way, not just for me, but for anyone in their life we really love. We always want to take that burden from them.
And that was a
tough thing, you know. Unfortunately, I can't give you the burden. I can't just give it over. I got dealt these cards, and I have to play the game now.
Sure. And as an empathetic person, which you obviously are, I mean, it's almost an added burden to your own pain because you're seeing the pain on other people's eyes. You've got to handle that as well and deal with that.
Yeah,
I know that as a father, you know, as a father, you never ever want your kids to see you suffering because they love you so much. When you're suffering, they're suffering, you know. So it's kind of, but you know, it's a fascinating question, and I wanted to jump into this a bit later, but jump into it now. You know, as men, we don't like to be needy or dependent or ask for help or vulnerable. You know, it's just, and yet it's such a lie because no man, no matter how healthy or strong he is, can actually do what God's given him to do to the best of his ability without other people.
Yes.
You know, without, so I mean that band of brothers, you know, and sisters that you're vulnerable with and that you're dependent on to some degree. You know, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing, isn't it? You know, because we can't do it alone. I mean, no matter what your situation, if you try and do it alone, you're not gonna reach your full God given potential without a doubt. So that's beautiful.
But you know, Craig, something that I noticed, and that was actually so beautiful for me, it's something that I didn't expect. When I did my first half Ironman, it's like when I finished that race, when I went over that line, I just felt this sense of, you know, release happening. And it's kind of like everyone saw me different from that day.
Yeah.
That even though I was fine, I was perfectly fine in my heart. I've dealt with it. I would say have made peace with the situation, what happened. But on that day, it's almost like everyone around me realized that I'm actually okay.
Wow.
And there was a lot of freedom in that because it's not just about me. Even though I've dealt with it, I look at my brother, my sister, my father, my friends, and I can always pick it up because me being in the wheelchair, I'm very sensitive to it, of people's reactions and emotions around me. And from that day, that people actually realized I'm actually okay.
Wow.
That they didn't lose anyone. Like I'm still the same person.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm in a wheelchair, but I'm still the same person. I'm actually more healed on the inside than I ever was before.
Right.
And that's the miracle. Honestly, like that is the biggest miracle. And us as humans always look at the physical body. It is important. I'm not neglecting that fact. But we only focus on the physical. And we neglect what's going on in our hearts.
Right.
And many people, you know, walk around with perfectly healthy bodies, but their minds and their hearts are broken.
Right.
Are broken. And I feel, especially men, like as you say, we don't want to show that we're hurting. We don't want to show that it's difficult. And that's a big mistake that we make.
Huge. Well, I mean, the suicide rate amongst men is 4 times higher than that of women. And I think one of the reasons is exactly that. You know, we don't want to.
Yeah.
I had a very close friend 4 years ago take his own life, you know, and he left behind 2 kids. And his false belief Firstly, there were two big things. Firstly, as a friendship group, we didn't know what he was going through. He didn't feel like he could share with us. And it was a big indictment on us. And we changed a lot of things after that. We said, never again will we let a brother not feel as though he could share. But he also felt like he couldn't share. But the other thing was, he felt like the insurance payout check was of more value to his family than he himself was. And that's such an incredible lie, isn't it? You know, I mean, the value we have to other people in our lives is being there for them.
No, but you see, Craig, like when I speak a lot at schools, like that's a very, I love speaking to the youth, I love speaking to kids. And school is a bit different compared to when I was there and even when you were there. Obviously, our age gap is significant, but... When I go to schools nowadays and I talk about my suicide journey, because I was suicidal after my accident, and I can relate now with two things. There's a shame aspect that we don't want to talk about, that we don't want to tell people, even our closest friends, that we are not doing okay, that we are struggling, because we're ashamed of what are they going to say? What are people around me going to say? It's so much easier to put up a smile and just pretend like everything is fine. That's the first thing. And then secondly, when I get to schools, I keep on hearing stories of children taking their life. And this is high school. I've even gone to a primary school where an 11-year-old son has committed suicide. Now, that is... I don't know. I don't even have words to say. Like, how do you get to that point at 11 years old to take your own life? You know, but I think the more important question is, how can we allow that?
Yeah.
How can we allow that as people,
as a society,
that are community?
Yeah.
That's not acceptable. No. It's really not.
We're not listening, are we?
Yeah, it's not just about that person. You know, we also have a responsibility to check in on each other.
Very much so. Yeah. Well, it's a tough society, isn't it? We're living in a society now where people are canceling each other. You know, where there's not a lot of grace, is there? Not a lot of grace to say, you know what, you're a valuable human being. You're human first before anything else. And I mean, that's another thing which you're modeling so absolutely brilliantly. A lot of us and I think particularly men, feel less than. We feel like we're not enough. You know, I think the biggest question on a man's heart often is, do I have what it takes? Am I man enough, you know? And a lot of men grow up, boys grow up not feeling that. I mean, I arrived at adulthood absolutely not feeling that. And when you look at it, it's so irrational and illogical, because you look at yourself and you've got everything you need. And when I look at someone like you, I think, I mean, there's not even an ounce of less than, you know, there's an ounce of more than, you know, because of that inner wholeness, the sense of purpose, the value adding to other people's lives, which is just enormous and tremendous. How do you, I mean, your sense of validity and legitimacy as a man in a wheelchair, I mean, did you struggle with that? I mean, you mentioned cracking the Ironman I mean, that translated you into this hero status. But it must have been a struggle that.
Yeah, so in the beginning, you know, I had this huge thing of, I believe it's a sense of pride. I believe that's the root of it. As a man, that you don't want to accept help from people. And I was very fortunate from the beginning. I realized and I told myself, look, you do need help with some things. There are just some things that I cannot do on my own. And I had to make peace with that. And that's a saving grace, because if you go through life, for me, I think it's almost easier because I'm physically not capable of doing so many things. So I know that it's a truth. But for someone that's perfectly able, that don't want to, you know, accept help in a physical sense, in a mental sense, you want to keep up this shield. You're doing yourself an injustice, man. Yeah. Going through life like that. Like, you cannot do it on your own. You simply can't. Yeah. And I went through an interesting journey while training for the Ironman. And when I got closer to the Ironman, I really had to ask myself the question, why am I doing this? Am I doing this to prove something to someone, prove it to myself? Why am I doing this? Because I feel like many people, especially with sport endeavors, they just want to prove something.
Yeah.
But that's not the right, you know, that's not the right attitude to have when you're doing these things. Mm. In the beginning, there surely was a sense of it, that I wanted to prove something to myself, that I'm still able, that I can do this. And then later I realized that my steam is going to run dry if I keep on doing that, if you keep on trying to prove something to someone. When I had to look at that, I really had to change my heart. Why am I doing this?
And I mean, tell us about that journey, because I think that's a journey that most men actually never reach in their lives, whether they're fully enabled or not. You know, the sense of I am enough, that who I am is good. You know, God created me as I am, and the value I bring is exactly what he wants. You know, I mean, that's a powerful place to get to. I think very few people get to that in their entire lives, no matter how old they are.
Yeah, so for me, it was last year, November, I did the full Ironman. And after finishing that Ironman, that's a sense that I got, because I've been training for the full Ironman for a very long time. I've had it on my heart, and it took me 7 years after my accident to do the full Ironman. And that's from day one, right up until doing the event. I wasn't training for 7 years, but the dream has been there. Okay.
Wow.
And when I finished the Ironman, it's kind of like, I felt that big release. I felt that I can rest now, that there's no more pressure to perform. And it's because I experienced something interesting. After the event, you don't get a medal saying, like, you did it, you are so strong, like, you made it. There was actually not so much attention. And that's great, because it made me realize that even if the world doesn't recognize that you do something, are you okay with it? Did you just do it for yourself?
Right.
And that's what I felt, because, I don't know, it's difficult to put it in words, but that was for myself. That was just for me. And the most amazing thing, the Ironman took place in Port Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. That's where I had my accident, close to it. And that's also where I was in rehabilitation. So for a very long time, I had this thing of when someone would say Port Elizabeth, I would immediately think, oh, you know, pain, hurt, disappointment. And then 7 years later, I went and did an Ironman there. It's kind of like, you know, God will take you back to a place where you have so much hurt and pain in your life and give you victory there. And that's what I experienced. Fantastic. Is that now I had victory over this accident, over this what happened to me. And now I don't have to do Ironman to be okay, to realize that I'm fine.
Fantastic.
That I am enough, just the way that I am. You don't need a case full of medals to prove that.
Right. I mean, that's a powerful, powerful place to get to, being okay within and who you are. And as I said, very few people get to that. I mean, I don't think I've arrived there. I mean, a lot of the times you do stuff and you realize, you know, what the motivations are. I mean, with this shoulder operation, I've lost a lot of muscle mass, you know, and you realize, gee, you know, some of my identity was in having more muscle mass, you know, and when you lose it and you get skinnier and you think, well, you know, am I still the same Craig? And the reality is, of course you are, you know. I mean, you're just as powerful, just as valuable, you know. It's not the externality things that make you who you are. I mean, these are powerful lessons, are they? I mean, they're lessons that very, very few people ever learn, particularly men. You know, I think we do battle with our egos. We have to, we want to be powerful, you know, we want to be the guy who can do it all. And when we can't, you suddenly realize how fragile that facade is, you know, because when the facade goes, you think, it's like a guy who loses money, you know, he's used to driving the BMW, suddenly can't drive anymore. You think, well, you know, was my manhood and my value in the car I drove, or is it in me as a human being? So I think these lessons are incredibly powerful, incredibly powerful, you know, and you're a living example of it. Be it more than that, you know, you're a master of these things. And I think what you have to share with youth, and not just youth, men much older than you, is incredibly valuable.
Yes.
It's life-changing. It's freeing.
Yeah. But Craig, the thing is, once you've, and I think you've experienced this to a small degree with your shoulder, you only realize what you placed your value in once you've lost actually everything. Yep. Once you've lost all your money, you've been completely broke, or you've become paralyzed, and then you actually realize that was my identity. That 100%. Was it.
Yeah,
and it's a house built on sand. It's a house built on sand. And when the storm comes, financial storms, physical storms, or relationships or your work falls apart or your business fails or whatever happens, life hits everyone at some point.
Yeah.
Then you start realizing, what was my house actually built on?
Yeah.
What was it made of? Mm. And to me, as I say, that was a massive reality check. That was massive.
Phenomenal. I mean, yeah. The lessons, you know, we're getting out of this are just magnificent. Love it. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to ask you is, you know, a lot of people react differently to people who are in a wheelchair or have some form of, you know, I mean, and it's quite interesting because I had this conversation recently with someone, you know, and they said, well, I don't want people to feel sorry for me, you know, and people tend to, you know, talk louder with stupid things because they, you know, what is your message about that? You know, when someone comes across you in a wheelchair, I mean, you're a powerful man. Alvin, you're a powerful man, and yet people perceive you as in a wheelchair, and there's an awkwardness sometimes. Hey, how do I deal with this, you know?
Yeah. So in the beginning, right, I remember like we were going to the mall and I could literally feel everyone staring at me. You can just feel it and just know it. And I think I just got over it. I just really let it go because now I don't even realize that people probably still stare just because I'm young and people think, what happened? And, you know, there was a story. And now, you know, if someone would react in a funny way, and people, yes, some people are a bit awkward and they're not sure how to react. Because of the things that I have done physically, all that pressure, all that, you know, that facade is just gone. I don't care what people think. I don't have to prove that I'm strong. Even though I am in a wheelchair, it's kind of like you just lose all of that because I know what's going on in the inside. And I realized through this whole journey, and this is probably, you know, the main message is that the external doesn't matter, really doesn't matter. Right. What goes on in the inside.
Yes. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah. Well, one of the things, I wrote a little book called the Six Pack of Masculine Virtues. And one of the things, and you know, when you write these things, you get quite humbled because you realize I'm not getting this right myself. I know the theory. But one of the things is, you know, true masculinity judges itself by its character, not by its externality. Yeah. What's inside, not what's on the outside. I mean, and you're a living example of that. I mean, the other thing, you know, I mean, there's so many powerful lessons we could talk for hours. The other thing is, you know, how do you deal with, you're a man of faith. I'm a man of faith, a believer, a Christian as well. There's always the challenge of being angry with God, questioning God. You know, why did you allow this to happen to me? You know, it's not supposed to happen. You know, you Christians are supposed to be above all this. I mean, that must have been quite a journey, the faith journey as well, because you still have a vibrant, strong, healthy faith. Was that challenged?
I was never angry at the Lord. I had many questions, but I was never angry just because I knew that I can't be angry at the same person that's my only hope. I kind of understood that being angry at God is not going to get me anywhere. If I was going to get any answers out of this, then it was going to be from the Lord. So that was my mindset in the beginning. And then, you know what? I sought out to find answers. I've, you know, tried to figure out what is happening. Why is this happening? And I get that a lot. Were you never angry at God? And what people have to realize that if you acknowledge that there is a God, then you have to acknowledge that there is a devil, okay? That not everything is from God. Obviously, this thing isn't from him. I decided to get into that car. That was my decision. No one made me get into it. And I think people love to do blame shifting. We have to understand that we have free will. We can do what we want. But God can't use it, and he is using the situation.
Right.
Definitely not from him, but he will use it.
Right.
And then one day I had a very, you know, because people kept on asking me, but are you never, weren't you angry? And I kept on getting that question. And then I'd ask the Lord one day, well, weren't you afraid that I would turn away from you, that I would resent the Lord, that I would never come back? This is my conversation with God at the moment. Yes. And I got the most astonishing reply that I felt in my heart. I'll go to say that you must remember one thing, that I made you and I know what you are made of.
Wow.
And I knew the decisions that you would make. And then everything kind of fell into place for me. So I kept asking for a long time, why me? Why is this happening to me? Why is this happening to someone that's active, good at sport, loving the outdoors, that literally can't sit still, and now you become paralyzed? So that was my question. And then after that encounter with the Lord, having that conversation, I realized that I'm the perfect person to who this should have happened to.
Sure.
Who he can use for this. Because should this have happened to someone that is more prone to staying in house, you know, let's say they are more talented at computer work and that kind of stuff. That's just not where my talent is, where it was dispersed. But, and then I realized that that person wouldn't have gone out and did an Ironman or swam the Robben Island Crossing. And then it clicked. Then everything actually came together and I really understood why certain things happen. And everything made a bit more sense to me. Sure. And that also gave me freedom to embrace what happened. To show that, you know, to show that I'm the perfect person for who this is going to happen.
Right.
I'm going to make the best of this situation. And God knows exactly what he's doing. He never lost control of my life or your life or anyone's life. Mm. He's always been in control.
And that's an incredible validation of you, isn't it? You know, God saying to you, I knew you could deal with this. I knew I could trust you to handle this in a way that would be amazing and to his glory.
Yeah.
And to, you know, that's fantastic. It really is amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like really. It's like you say, it's, God knows he can trust you with that. You know, I know there's a popular saying that goes around, and it's not biblical, where people say God gives his most difficult battles to his strongest soldiers. That's not in the Bible. What is in the Bible is God will never tempt you above what you can handle.
Right.
And that's an example of what I went through. I was never tested and tempted above what I can handle.
Right.
And that you have to realize. It's just a different way of seeing it, because the world says that, and then it comes across that God gives us these battles and these trials, and he made the car accident happen. And I believe it paints a wrong picture of God the Father.
Right.
Yeah.
We're in a battle, aren't we? We're in a battle in this world. Tough things happen to good people, and you know, it's how we respond to them that counts.
Absolutely.
I mean, what's very clear, Alvin, in your life is there's a tremendous sense of purpose. You know, you're a man with a mission and a purpose. And has this enhanced that purpose, do you think, in terms of what you're
absolutely
here to achieve?
Absolutely. You know what? The story of David and Goliath is phenomenal. And it really stood out to me. And I started studying it, right?
Mm.
Now, if you think of David, David was a shepherd boy, and if it wasn't for Goliath, he never would have ended up being a king. That really, I would say, put him on the map. It really exposed him, who God made him on the inside. It exposed what was inside of him all along.
Right.
And it really, he first had a lot of training, defeated the bear and the lion in the field where no one saw him. No one saw it until Goliath. And then one day I actually started studying, what does the name Goliath mean? And that means to discover oneself, to bring out of exile. And isn't that just so profound that these trials really ignite our purpose? It really pushes us into the purpose that God has for us. Where the enemy might think that he's getting an upper hand, that he's going to destroy your life, God is just really using that to push you further into your purpose. Now, I'm very bold about saying that this accident is probably one of the best things that could have happened. Because I wouldn't have done these things if it wasn't for the accident. I'm 100% sure of that. So these are, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's a blessing in disguise, but God can definitely use it to bring out the best in me and for his glory.
That's beautiful. Yeah, that's a deeply inspiring story. But it takes you to respond well, doesn't it? I mean, God
absolutely
can call and you can say no. You know, you can have the opportunity in front of you. You can choose to be negative, to angry, you know. And so it takes us cooperating, you know, with the plan to truly make it happen. I mean, just in closing, you know, masculinity is something that's really under fire at the moment. You know, you see hashtag men are trash, toxic masculinity. What are your views on masculinity? You know, what is it that makes a man a real man, a good man, a champion man?
Sure. You know what? I think it's not necessarily what the world says it is. As we spoke about earlier, now we don't have to go into detail yet about that. It's not about being strong and being able to do things physically. I believe, you know, being a real man is about being that righteous man, right, being a just man, really standing up for what is right, what is wrong, really defending the people that necessarily can't stand up for themselves. Right. That's what a true man is, but also not being swayed by popular opinion or by what men say in this world. It's really about what is right, what is wrong, and standing for that despite anything that comes. And that we see so often that people are afraid to stand up for the things that are actually right.
Yes.
And they start bending towards, popular opinion because they're scared of criticism and, you know, these kind of things. And I believe true masculinity is standing up for these kind of things. What is right for righteousness and not compromising, on these things.
No matter what people think of you, no matter what the image might portray, you know, no matter what social media says, you know what's right, you stand up for rights, and I love that too, you know, defending the powerless and standing against what's wrong. Profound.
Yeah.
Profound.
Absolutely.
Not about the car you drive, not about the size of your biceps or your bank balance. It's about your character and your ability to stand up for what's right. I love that. I mean, that sums it up.
You know what? I think if I can summarize it, it's all about having clean hands and a pure heart. Mm. That's it.
Wonderful.
That is, and it actually applies to everyone, not just masculinity.
Sure.
But men are usually on the forefront of these kind of things.
Yeah, well, men tend to abuse their strength more than women, don't they? Men
That's
tend
true.
To be more destructive, you know, and I think the ego is more of a driver. But if we get it right, it's not about that. It's about the character and the standing up for what's right. Oh.
Absolutely. Oh, man,
fantastic chatting to you, man. Are there any final comments you'd like to throw in there to anyone listening to this?
Pardon? To say again?
Any final comments you'd like to say to anyone listening to these inspiring words from you?
Yes, you know what? I think we didn't even touch upon this, but I think it's so important to say that there's always hope, that no matter what we go through, what our situation is, that there's always hope. And I always say that my life story is almost as bad as it can get. And it's just a testimony of there's always a way out of these things.
Beautiful.
Because people feel like, you know, you're in this dark hole, depression or anxiety, suicide. I've been there, and trust me, there is a way out every single time.
Well, you've lived it and modeled it and shown it. I don't know if you've seen, there's that beautiful cartoon thing of a heron, a big bird swallowing a frog. And the frogs, it's a cartoon, and the frogs from inside the gullet, the hands are coming out and they're strangling the bird. And it says, never give up, never, ever, ever give up. No matter what.
That's
a profoundly beautiful message. Yeah.
Thank you
so much, man, for your words and your time and your life and your purpose and the impact you're having on the world and people around you. It's truly inspirational and great to chat to you, man.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I had so much fun. Thank you.
Fantastic.